The Pro Football Weekly Podcast is back, and we are thrilled that you are back with us. I am your co-host, Arthur Arkus, joined as always by Eric Edholm. We are taping remotely this week, so hopefully this will be okay. We're both at our own humble home abodes, and I think our volumes and levels are sounding fine. Eric, how are we doing today?
Testing, 1, 2, 3. I think we're doing all right now.
Yeah, you sound wonderful, and we had what could have been a wonderful week 15 in the NFL. Eric, I guess before I get into that, just a quick reminder, as we do every week, our listeners need to subscribe. They don't need to, but we certainly hope they will subscribe to the PFW podcast, all four of our podcasts over at iTunes. Leave us a rating and a review while you are there, and check out our great sponsor, Loot Crate, as well. LootCrate.com, the best surprise you know is coming. All right, Eric, as I was saying, we had what I thought could be a wonderful Week 15 in the NFL, but there were some minor issues, we will call them. How confident are you that Week 16 won't also end in controversy?
Yeah, right. It's funny. The NFL may not even care that much, because the fact is, as of, Wednesday, we were still getting questions to Ben Roethlisberger and Mike Tomlin about how they handled the end of the game, and Bill Belichick about what he thought about replay and this and that. And so, I wrote that column on Monday saying that, boy, such a great week of football, but too bad it was marred by index cards and controversy, and then worst of all, what happened with Jerry Richardson. But I guess the bigger picture is that the NFL on some level just loves the fact that we're talking about the NFL. Yeah. And, as long as the Jerry Richardson stuff is sort of suppressed a little bit, that's a good thing for the league. So, yeah, I have no idea what will happen this week, but it will be interesting.
Yeah, it's weird how that works. That's a good point. They can kind of block out the Richardson stuff by all this other craziness. I guess the NFL may be the only sports league in the world that can have just craziness on top of craziness. I hadn't intended on talking about the Panthers. I don't think we'll spend a bunch of time, but P. Diddy, Colin Kaepernick, Stephon Curry, are these guys viable candidates to potentially be the next group of NFL owners, or is that more kind of pipe dream?
Yeah, P. Diddy, or whatever he goes by these days. It's funny, actually, that's a perfect segue there, because I believe at one point he called them the North Carolina Panthers, which should be automatic revocation from applying for this. So, yeah, I know it got a little tread there for a few days. I suspect that it'll always happen, whether it's Donald Trump or Bon Jovi or any of these celebrity investors who sort of kick the tires a little bit on a franchise up for sale, but they tend to go to the non-celebrities more often than not. So, yeah, I suspect this is more just a cute story than anything else.
But what about a certain Hall of Fame member, a former executive who has likely not only can kind of tug at the purse strings, but also has the NFL rep, a pre-existing one that may put him in as a front runner for this in this race?
Who are we talking about? I'm sorry, I'm blanking here.
Former Niners owner,
Eddie DiPartolo, right? Yep. Yeah. Yeah, no, and I think there'll be a lot of people. The NASCAR executive who was outbid by Jerry Richardson, I'm blanking on his name right now, was outbid in '93. He's sort of hinted he might be interested as well. And it's so funny. I think you start with whether it's a good investment, and that's the first part. Number two is, because the owners are such a tight-knit group, they tend to kind of hand-pick these things. Yes, the dollar amount is going to be what ultimately will decide these things, but Jerry Richardson, being very much old school, being a member of the Billionaire Boys Club and until further notice, I think will, as long as the price is within range, I think probably sell to somebody whom he approves of, that he thinks will fit into this little fraternity. So I don't know, man. It'll take months to sort this out, obviously, I think. But once bids start coming in, whether it's the summer or whatnot, I don't know. But it'll be fascinating to see, because I think it's a more valuable franchise than the Buffalo Bills, which is the most recent one to sell. And that was kind of a quote-unquote watered-down price of $1.4 billion. I know it's crazy to think, but yeah, that's a story that's going to be an interesting one to follow over the summer, I think.
Do you think, Eric, that the NFL could benefit from finding someone outside of the good old boys club fraternity? It seems like there's maybe an opportunity here to go with someone more outside the box and maybe I don't know, just bring in a fresh face after all kind of the silliness that we've grown accustomed to with a lot of these good old boys.
Yeah, of course, but I don't think they view it that way. I mean, I don't know, you know, right? I mean, I would love to see some new blood. I would love to see somebody who, you know, maybe comes from outside the, you know, the inner circle of NFL power or something like that. But at the same time, we've had other, you know, people who have been rich people who are outside that circle who haven't necessarily added to the fresh ideas and the new perspectives. So I don't know. I think it's going to require somebody with deep pockets, as we said, but also somebody who kind of vows to keep the team in the Charlotte area. That's going to be important, you know, for Jerry Richardson, I know. So we'll see. I mean, there's a lot of angles to this thing, and you know, it's a story to watch.
Yeah, no doubt. I hadn't really intended on talking Panthers. We're going to move on. I did want to ask you, Eric, quickly about your piece. We're taping here Wednesday, the 20th, and you had a good piece, the way we hear it, on ProFootballWeekly.com today about Blake Bortles. And my, how fast things can change there in Jacksonville. Yeah. And suddenly, Blake Bortles may have some contract leverage. I jokingly tweeted, that's one of my favorite NFL developments of the season.
Yeah, that and Case Keenum, right? I mean, it's crazy how, you know, in 2-3 months, really, 2 months, I guess you could argue, things have changed so dramatically for both guys. We could technically have a Keenum-Bortles Super Bowl. I think that, you know, it wouldn't be the wildest thing to suggest that would actually happen, too. And so, you know, it's been great for Jacksonville, and I think it's going to be the kind of thing that, you know, whereas in August he'd had such a brutal training camp, appeared to be on the verge of, you know, of losing his job.
Yeah.
He's turned things around, and the staff has handled it beautifully. You know, they didn't let him fail. I mean, you remember the win over Pittsburgh. That was a dramatic, you know, huge statement victory for the team. Blake Bortles attempted one pass in the final 31 and a half minutes of that game.
Yeah.
You know, they took the ball out of his hands, but as time went on, they let the leash out a little bit. Time, you know, incrementally, and even without good receiving talent, even with other things kind of holding them back, he's performed better. His mechanics have gotten better. They've called smart plays. They've played to his strengths. They've minimized his weakness. And oh, by the way, it looks like they're going to probably, you know, not only take on the $19 million, you know, maybe they scrap that and give him an extension, but he's in their plans for the future, which, like you said, I wouldn't have ever imagined come September, because I just didn't think he had this kind of season in him.
It's a great point, Eric, about that statement victory in Pittsburgh. Of course, Ben Roethlisberger, I think he had 5 interceptions that day, if it wasn't 4.
Yeah.
And like you said, they were hiding Bortles to the best of their ability, but you fast forward a month or 6 weeks or whatever it was, and he was airing it out in that Chargers win, I know.
Yep.
He has 7 touchdowns and no picks in the month of December. He's been, frankly, as crazy as it sounds, he's been as good as any NFL quarterback over the past several weeks. And a couple points you made in that piece kind of included the resourcefulness that he's shown. It's easy to forget Leonard Fournette hasn't been out there the whole time. And, oh yeah, Allen Robinson goes down first quarter of week one. So good on Bortles to maximize the guys he does have, the Keelan Coles, the D.D. Westbrooks, the Marcus Lees of the world before he got hurt. It's also a good look for Dave Caldwell, though, too, right? I mean, he had Alan Hearns as an undrafted guy. He went for 1,000 yards. Keelan Cole is the flavor of the week. And, oh, yeah, of course, Dave Caldwell is the guy who made that move for Blake Bortles at number 3 overall a couple years ago.
Right. And, you know, you don't bring in a Tom Coughlin as an overlord and not fear for your job if you're Caldwell. Now,
exactly.
You know, it's very similar to a head coach, you know, sitting there with a new GM, and they've got a you know, put on their Sunday bests and all that and look good and point out all the good stuff they've done. Well, it's pretty obvious. You know, I mean, Dave Caldwell, to his credit, and this was something that people held against him for a long time, has been in Blake Bortles' corner almost from Jump Street and has defended him pretty fiercely, and maybe more so than the coaches and certainly more so than Coughlin did early on when, you know, it's Coughlin's language suggested that he was looking at other alternatives. And you know, there was all that Eli Manning trade talk before October 31st. So, yeah, Caldwell was the guy who not only drafted him, but also decided to pick up the option and you know, has been one of his defenders. So it's good for him and a good look. And I think they can make that arrangement work out where Caldwell stays on as GM, given all the team success they've had and all the homegrown talent, along with the pieces they've added, like, you know, Malik Jackson and AJ Boye and Calais Campbell and all these guys. I mean, really the core of the team has been built through the draft the last couple of years.
Yep, no doubt. And you know, maybe Coughlin will get the credit for this free agent spending spree that brought in, obviously, Calais Campbell and A.J. Boye. But last year, you know, you got a couple big pieces there and Barry Church and, as you said, Malik Jackson and, of course, Jalen Ramsey with the first rounder. Maybe it was a no-brainer, but Jalen Ramsey may be the best corner in football now, so it's looking pretty darn good, I'd say. Eric, it's not one of the better games of the weekend, but maybe this is a decent segue in just the what the hell is going on in the NFL world. The Jaguars go to San Francisco, and maybe the storyline is how both of these quarterbacks that no one thought would be in the picture, obviously Jimmy Garoppolo and Blake Bortles until this most recent turnaround, but you got these interesting contract situations looming over both. Why don't you just quickly get the listeners up to speed yet another good way we heard piece. We haven't even published it yet. It'll be up tomorrow on the website. Just about Jimmy Garoppolo and what an interesting situation that's going to be trying to make sure he is locked up long term. Without sort of, you know, pushing the can down the line too far.
Yeah, it hadn't even occurred to me too when I first wrote the Garoppolo piece and then later about Bortles. You know, sometimes you write when people call you back and things like that. So that's kind of how that happened. It didn't occur to me till afterwards. I said, "Oh wait, they're playing each other this week." And you know, you hear all the praise thrown around for both guys, how they played lately. So yeah, I mean, another unexpected development. Nobody saw this trade coming. Nobody was sure when Garoppolo would get in there. Remember, they were saying, "Hey, we don't even know if he'll play this year." I think the assumption is that they have this franchise tag that they can put on Garoppolo. It's the safest bet. You know, it's their, you know, it's their trump card. If they need it, they can play it. They're not worried about it. They won't offend anybody, all that stuff, because of this the unique situation here. We're talking about a guy with five career starts, you know, three with the team he's on now. And so it's so early. There really aren't that many comps. You know, we talk about real estate. Okay, what? There's always a comp out there. Well, with Garoppolo's situation, there really isn't. I mean, maybe the closest thing was when the Packers extended Aaron Rodgers after his first season. I hadn't thought about that till later, but you know, Rodgers, they made him what I think like the top five paid quarterback after 1 year. I don't think that's going to happen with Garoppolo, but I think the 49ers are not, Mike, I'll say this. I don't think their first option is to franchise him. I think they're going to try to sign him to a deal that's mutually beneficial, one that pays him quite a bit. People may be shocked. Oh, my God, he's only started, you know, seven games by the end of the year. And he's getting how many million? That's crazy. This is the NFL. This is stupid. Or also allowing him to hit the market when he turns 30 or 31 again. I mean, that would be great for Jimmy. That would be buttering both sides of the bread. You get the money now. You also get to play yourself into a new deal in 4 or 5 years. So that's, I think, what the most likely scenario will be. And I've heard that the relationship so far between, you know, Don Yee, his agent, and the team has been off to a great start. Nobody's concerned at this point. Nobody's worried about any you know, loggerheads. So, yeah, I just – it's going to be very interesting to see what John Lynch and the 49ers come up with and also what Jimmy's representatives come up with creatively to make it worth his while to sign now versus just, like you said, kicking the can down the road, franchising him. And then possibly owing them even more money next year because they just, you know, there's no way that they're going to be able to pay them. I think it'll be mutually beneficial for them to do that now. Mm-hmm. And I think both sides can come out looking good.
It'll be fun to watch. Obviously, the kind of latter, you know, possibility is kind of a Kirk Cousins situation. And while I know Don Yee or any other agent wouldn't typically advise their client kind of demand the franchise tag, normally you want to lock up as much as you can, obviously, right away. There's an argument to be made that Garoppolo maybe can maximize his leverage. Again, it's risky, but look at where Kirk Cousins is sitting now. He's going to have collected almost $50 million guaranteed before he gets the monster deal at age 29 or whatever it is. So it'll be really interesting to see how that works out. And we should add, the Jaguars can clinch the AFC South. They've already clinched their first postseason berth in a decade, but they can lock up the division before that Week 17 game with Tennessee just by beating San Francisco Sunday, so that'll be interesting. Eric, is it at all an indictment of Matt Ryan that Jimmy Garoppolo has been brilliant in three games with Kyle Shanahan? He's only been in the building for whatever, five, 6 weeks, and Matt Ryan stunk in year one under Shanahan. Is that a fair? It's not apples to apples, but I'm looking to go to the Falcons Saints preview next, and I feel like that's a decent way to tee it up.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting thought. I hadn't really, you know, considered it in those terms, and boy, you know,
Is, Eric. Ryan was not good in the first year under Shanahan. Obviously, yeah. He's the reigning MVP, but I think he had a career high in turnovers. I know the situational offense and the red zone stuff was really bad 2 years ago with Kyle.
Yeah, and obviously there was better talent there in Atlanta, right. You know, than what the 49ers have right now. So,
exactly.
You know, you have to factor in so many things. You know, how much talent do you have? Who are you playing? I mean, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo hasn't exactly gone against the 99 Rams and 85 Bears here. So, like, you know, part of this is, you know, who knows what would happen if Garoppolo was traded in August, right? You know, you're right, though. The red zone offense was terrible for the 2015 Falcons. The third down offense was not good. They got shut out late in the year by Carolina. I'm just trying to remember that season. And you forget how bad things were to the point where even a couple of games into last season, there was still that question of, are you guys fully clicking? And then it really took off. So, yeah, I don't think it's fair, but it's an interesting point I had not considered.
I'm not interested in being fair, Eric. I just want to be interesting. So the last point we'll make on that game before we head to New Orleans and Matt Ryan looking to, you know, the rematch for the second time in 3 weeks. This is Garoppolo's big test, obviously, with the Jaguars defense. No, it may not be the 85 Bears, but I don't think there's any argument at this point that it is the best in the NFL and maybe by a wide margin. So it'll be fun. It'll be a lot of fun to see how he handles that. At home Sunday. All right. So second time in 3 weeks, Deion Jones plays the hero a few weeks ago and bails out Matt Ryan, who had three interceptions in that game in Atlanta, 20-17 Falcons victory. Deion Jones bailed out Dan Quinn too for that crazy decision to not push the Saints back on the false start, I guess it was. So anyway, I've kind of set the table a little bit. The NFC South is going to carry a lot of the intrigue over these final couple weeks. Where do you kind of think these teams are at? The Falcons survived in Tampa Bay, but they're not doing it all that convincingly, are they?
No, I mean, and you could start with Matt Ryan. I mean,
yep.
I don't know what's been going on the last 3 weeks, but it hasn't really looked good. And interestingly enough, and maybe you've seen something different or whatever, to me it looks like they're having trouble when they throw the ball to Julio. I mean, he had the 200 and whatever yard game four games ago, and in the three games since then, he hasn't even come close to matching that total, you know, combined. So, the throws are off target. They've led to interceptions. They've stalled drives. You know, there just has been a lack of chemistry there. And I do feel for Steve Sarkisian because, you know, he faced so much guff and everything was about, well, you know, you're not Kyle Shanahan. You're calling plays the wrong way. You're not doing what we need to do. A lot of that, I think, was just wrong. Were there some crazy ones along the way? Yeah, like the New England game was silly. But for the most part, you know, that wasn't really an issue. I think a lot of this is Matt Ryan. And so, interestingly enough, though, they're at 9-5. They can still win this division. They went out and, you know, and do that. So defensively, they've been good. And, once they get Tevin Coleman back, they'll have that two-headed running game going again. And I don't know. It's a fascinating team to me and one that could be really dangerous if Ryan and Jones stay on that same page.
Yeah, it's crazy to think as much scrutiny as maybe they've faced this season in their Super Bowl, you know, or NFC conference title defense campaign. They still got a pretty good shot here to go ahead and go back-to-back division champs. So that's a great point by you. This is the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. He is Eric. I am Arthur. Glad that you are with us. Check us out on iTunes. Subscribe, rate, review, all that great stuff. And check out our great sponsor, Loot Crate. The best surprise you know is coming. Eric, you mentioned getting Devonta Freeman back will be huge. But the one thing that was convincing about the Falcons in Tampa Bay Monday night, holy Devonta Freeman and that offensive line. That was just an absolute dominant performance.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, they just, you know, I know the Bucs didn't have Gerald McCoy and didn't have other pieces on defense. They lost about eight guys during the game. It was insane. But, yeah, I mean, watching Freeman and Ward take those guys on head on and knock safeties into tomorrow, I mean, it was a reminder of, you know, these guys aren't just – this isn't a finesse offense when it's really rolling. I mean, it can be a power run game. And, you know, I know they ran a lot of, you know, gap stuff and everything. It just it's a reminder of when they're at their best, they can be really hard to stop. And so obviously that puts more pressure on the Saints. No AJ Klein. He's done for the year. You know, that D-line's got to hold its water. And so, you know, it's a great game. And it obviously, like you said, has a huge impact on what this division is going to look like and who hosts a playoff game.
I believe, Eric, it was Devonta Freeman who took to Twitter after the win and said ain'ts, just to kind of rub it into the NFC South rivals. And I'm sure that they haven't forgotten that. Where do you think kind of the Saints are at? What did you think of what was a bit of a survival act for them last week? Maybe that was a trap game where you had to try and avoid looking ahead, looking past the Jets to the Falcons. But where do you think the Saints are at? I mean, they're still in the driver's seat for the division, but things haven't come quite as easily in recent weeks as they were during that remarkable stretch earlier in the year.
Right, and then there's the whole Sean Payton, you know, angle with the choke sign right. And everything, and he's kind of had to sort of, you know, suck it up a little bit this week and all that. I mean, right, the defense hasn't been quite as good over, you know, say the last five games that they had, the five previous games or something like that, and really all the way back to the London game. I mean, that was really or even the Panthers game, heck, in week three. I mean, so really the defense from week three to about, you know, I don't know, week 10 or 11 was outstanding. Now it's been good, but not to that elite level. But having Marshawn Lattimore helps a ton. Cam Jordan's having a fantastic year. You know, I think it takes a little pressure off the offense. And obviously, if they don't have one of those, you know, crazy 500-yard performances or, you know, absolutely demolish a team like the Bills or the Lions or the Redskins, they've dropped these big point totals on. I mean, you know, it's good to know that they're a pretty balanced team, too, and their special teams have come up big as well. So I still like this team. You know, the Jets have been playing hard. I don't put too much stock in that. I think they'll finish it off and – I think they'll beat the Falcons on Sunday, and then obviously they get the Bucks, which should be, I think, an easy road win for them. So, you know, they're in good shape. I mean, we still could be talking about a 12-win team here, which is pretty crazy. I never would have seen that at the beginning of the season.
Right. Yeah. I think coming off three or four 7-9 campaigns in a row. Yeah. So, all right. A couple minutes left on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Eric, what are the chances? We saw Sean McVay's Rams, sort of their coming of age last week, going to Seattle and beating the perennial big boys in the division, and not just beating them, but absolutely humiliating them. How confident are you that fellow rookie head coach Sean McDermott can do the same with his Bills going into Foxborough Sunday as they cling to the final playoff spot and try and erase the longest postseason drought in the NFL?
Yeah, I don't feel quite as good. I don't feel quite as good. You're right about what the Rams have done, and you know, I still feel like we don't give them enough credit. But it's been such a wild ride for the Bills this season. I mean, obviously they start 5-2. You know, even the locals were sort of saying, hey, as much as I like what I'm seeing, we've been 5-2 before and missed the postseason. It's happened twice since they last made it. So, you know, then watching them lose three straight and that horrible, you know, debacle in L.A., I was about to say San Diego.
Right.
But, you know, since then, what, they've now won 3 out of 4, I guess, you know, at Kansas City. They lose the tough one to the Patriots, sort of the frustrating win where Gronk, you know, hits White in the back and everything. And then they won two straight, played really good defense. And, I mean, really, the defense has gotten back on track after a really tough little stretch there. So, I mean, the team's playing well. And I think Belichick and the Patriots realize that, you know, even though this is a Bills team they've had good success against, they lost to him in Foxborough last year. They played a near perfect, you know, the Bills played a near perfect first half against the Patriots the last time they were up there a couple weeks back. So, you know, this is no layup game, I think, for New England. I just think they're a little bit better team.
Yeah, that makes two of us. I'm always looking for the parallels, and that seemed like one. But, I would expect New England to take care of business. Obviously, they just locked up their 9th straight division title. Just absurd stuff. And now the Packers have been eliminated. I believe they are alone for the longest active streak in the NFL in that regard. It's overall postseason bursts, not just division titles. So I don't think we're going to discuss the Bills as anyone potentially challenging the Patriots and the Steelers in the AFC playoffs. And I'm pretty sure I mentioned the Rams briefly. They go to Nashville and face Tennessee this week trying to lock up their division. And I don't think either of us believe in Tennessee. I won't put words in your mouth. But if you want to hit on them, great. But what about the Chiefs? I am a little bit curious if they have if they've built up some more confidence, or if you feel more confidence in them after what they've been able to do the past couple weeks.
Yeah, I mean, the parabola is kind of on the way back up here. You know, they start so strong, and then they hit this terrible stretch, and now seem to be back focused. And you know, I have way more faith in Kansas City than I do Miami. I know Miami's, you know, not that far removed from a brilliant performance over the Patriots, but last week completely undid that for me. So, yeah, I mean, I feel pretty good about where the Chiefs are at. It's like they rediscovered, okay, here's our identity, which is getting the ball to Kareem Hunt, making, you know, being less cute and more straight ahead, I think is a good way to say it. So
yeah.
Alex Smith has rebounded. Travis Kelce's still there. You know, we know what Tyreek Hill can do. You know, defensively, do they have some sore spots? Yeah, but I think if Marcus Peters is out there, they have a shot, and you know that gives them a chance. Obviously, in a game like this, or he could pick off four balls from Cutler, but then long term. You know, just looking at how the AFC is stacked up, I still think they're in pretty good shape. I don't know that I still view them as a Super Bowl caliber team, though.
I tweeted Saturday night after they blew out the Chargers, and now I can't remember what happened this morning. Did Peters? He must have won Defensive Player of the Week, right, or in the AFC? Did you see that or no?
That's a good question. I assume so because boy, he had the two picks and the fumble. I'm not sure about that 100%. Yeah,
no big deal, obviously. But that was kind of my takeaway from that game, as you said, getting back to Hunt, and he looked like he was running in September again, and Marcus Peters looked like it was his rookie season all over again coming off the suspension. So good moves by Andy Reid, I guess, getting that going again, and it looks like Matt Nagy's gotten that offense going again a little bit too. So interesting stuff. Before I close, Eric, with a little bit of Seattle and Dallas discussion, just a couple minutes left here on the PFW podcast, just very quickly, the Steelers, we talk about them on this podcast all the time. They seem to thrive with the distractions this week. I don't know where the buck stopped because it just kept getting passed between the coaches and Ben Roethlisberger for the way that game ended. But are you confident that they're okay without Antonio Brown? They go into Houston this week. Will Pittsburgh bounce back once again? I believe they can lock up a first round bye by going into Houston and winning.
Yeah, I mean, they should, right? Everything suggests that, you know, Bill O'Brien could be in some trouble. You know, this is not a well quarterback team with Deshaun Watson out. So, I mean, this is the perfect opponent. And then they, I believe, close with the Browns at home. So, you know, you couldn't ask for a better finish. You're going to miss two games, maybe more, but two with you know, Brown out for sure, it looks like. Yeah, this is the perfect slate. So, you know, the Steelers have done a lot of really good things prior to that tough to swallow loss, you know, the comeback against the Ravens, you know, holding their water against the Packers and Bengals, blowing out a good, you know, decent Titans team, whatever. But they've also had hiccups. Yeah, you know, the Colts game a few weeks back was terrible, you know, and they, I mean, you know, I don't think that's going to happen in this one, obviously, but you never know. And that could be the kind of thing that forces them to kind of change their identity a little bit. But you're right. I didn't really like the way that Ben was like, oh, yeah, I wasn't calling for a timeout. I was asking the sideline for a timeout. The replay showed him looking in any direction, signaling frantically to call timeout. So whatever. That's just my two cents on that whole mess. But, you know, that was a tough one, and we'll see how they rebound. I mean, this could end up being a huge situation for Le'Veon Bell to kind of reestablish. He was such a beast in the playoffs last year. I suspect it'll be his show again.
Yeah, no doubt. I think I couldn't agree more. He's going to be super busy, and I also expect Martavis and Juju to blow up in Brown's absence, because there's few teams that kind of can weather the loss of a star like that better than Pittsburgh. So let's close here, Eric. Just a minute or two left, but we do have to get to Dallas, and forget Gene Steratore's index card, but I am a little curious, just your general thoughts on Ezekiel Elliott coming back, and a wounded Seattle team that was humbled like I don't believe they have been in the Pete Carroll era, coming to Jerry World for an elimination game for both clubs.
Yeah, right. I agree. I can't remember the last time the Seahawks looked that vulnerable. And, you know, it's for me, it's a little bit low-hanging fruit. Oh, this is the end of an era. it may be the end of the Legion of Boom, but they still have Russell Wilson in his prime. They're going to be a good team. You know, I think it's foolish to write them off in the future. Do they have a lot of work to do in the offseason? You bet you. You know, salary cap and, you know, replacing some of those faces on defense. But just long term, I think they're going to be okay.
Yeah.
Short term, you know, this one's in Dallas. It feels like the momentum is definitely on the Cowboys' side. You mentioned Elliott coming back. You know, he's supposedly getting shredded in Mexico, and shredded in a good way, like working out, not in, you know, tequila way or something. But, yeah, I mean, it can't help but make it better. You know, that young secondary is battling, and they're doing what they can. So Cowboys feel like the better team, even if they did get a few balls kind of bounced their way a little bit in Oakland.
Do we see both of the wild cards come from the NFC South, though, or do you think one of the teams in this game, I guess they'd be the most likely – one of these two teams would be the more likely to come up and pull it away from one of the NFC South clubs, right?
Yeah, I still feel like it could be both South teams, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, if you just put them side by each, I would say those teams are a little stronger, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't think you can discount Dallas. I think they come up just short, but, you know, I guess it depends on what happens in these South versus South games.
Yeah, no doubt. The fact that they've got those head-to-heads left. Yep, great point. It's actually the Lions, technically, via the tiebreaker, are currently in the 7th seed, and then Seattle 8, Dallas 9. So it's going to be a fun final couple weeks in the NFC for sure. We'll see how it all unfolds, and we'll be back to discuss it next week on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Eric, I appreciate you sitting in from the home office today. I know you have an interview to get to at this point, so why don't you bid our listeners a farewell, and we'll see you tomorrow in the TV studio for Chicago Football Now.
Absolutely. Have a great, safe holiday. If you guys are listening to this before the holiday, if you've already celebrated, hope it was lots of good time, good food, good friends, and good family. And thanks for listening, you guys. Appreciate it. It's been a great year, and it's been fun having you guys here.
That's right. That's Eric at home. I'm Arthur Ruckers. Thank you guys so much, and happy holidays. We will talk to you again next week on the Pro Football Weekly podcast.